Welcome to Osteopathy Unplugged. I'm Steve Paulus Dio.
And I'm Bonnie Gintis Dio. We're American osteopathic physicians, and we're a married couple devoted to the practice and the study of osteopathic medicine. We developed Osteopathy Unplugged out of our passion for osteopathy and the recognition that our profession needs a more intimate conversation about who we are and what we do.
Join us as we sit in conversation, talking about the inner and outer workings of osteopathy.
Welcome to episode 38, Osteopathic Pathophysiology, the Osteopathic Facilitated Segment Theory. We're introducing a new feature for Osteopathy Unplugged, Osteopathic Pathophysiology. Periodically, we'll be discussing key osteopathic principles from a pathophysiological point of view. We will take basic theories of osteopathic practice and look closely at them in a pragmatic way. In these episodes, we'll combine the classical teachings of A.T. Still with modern neuroscience, physiology, and applied anatomy. In this episode, we'll be discussing the focal osteopathic facilitated segment theory and expanding upon that concept to what Steve calls the global facilitation theory. Also, we're going to continue a key theme from the discussion in the last episode as we move into the territory of osteopathic physiology and pathophysiology. As you might know, in addition to being an osteopath, Steve is also a physiologist. He loves to study what is known and knowable, and I balance that with my exploration of the unknown and unknowable. We're a good match in the ways we balance each other's outlooks and interests. In our last episode, That Was Then, This Is Now, A Deeper Dive, we carried forth a discussion started in episode 34, where we look carefully at Dr. Robert Fulford's insight that patients were easier to treat before World War II. In episode 38, Steve said, in reference to his experience of treating people in the 21st century, "People are overwhelmed. They're stressed in ways I've never observed before. More and more people are suffering from mental illnesses that overshadow their physical illnesses. I can feel the non-material strain in their tissues. I sense their existential fear. So many people of all ages feel hopeless, and I feel their hopelessness with my hands. The tissue textures of depression are palpable. The somatic dysfunctions associated with stress and anxiety feel like electrical systems with frayed wires, and the perceptual fields of shock and emotional trauma are profound." So often in osteopathy, we talk about how the tissues feel to us during an osteopathic treatment. When we intelligently reflect on the palpatory quality of the somatic elements of a patient's body, we're not splitting this human body into parts. Rather, we're perceptually noting elements that are calling out for attention and support in our osteopathic care. This is so important, I'm going to repeat my last sentence again. When we intelligently reflect on the palpatory quality of the somatic elements of a patient's body, we're not splitting this human body into parts. Rather, we're perceptually noting elements that are calling out for attention and support in our osteopathic care. When Steve said that somatic dysfunctions associated with stress and anxiety feel like electrical systems with frayed wires, he was describing the complex tissue textures associated with neurohormonal facilitation in general and facilitated segments in particular. Many of our Patreon subscribers and Facebook followers have asked this question relating to our last episode. How do you treat patients in a facilitated state? And they've also asked us, do you have a technique or protocol to treat patients who are so different now in the 21st century as compared to how they were in the 20th century? We are devoting this episode to addressing and exploring these questions and more. We'll start by reviewing the osteopathic theory of the facilitated segment and then extrapolate that neurohormonal concept broadly into a whole body, whole person effect that concerns every tissue, fluid, space, cell, and system of the body, including the material and non-material or energetic aspects. As we worked on this episode, we realized how vast the topic is. We've tried to give a generalized overview that will satisfy most, if not all, of our listeners. Our neurophysiological descriptions of the phenomena we cover might be too much for some of you who don't have a background in neuroscience. And we're well aware that for those of you who do, our discussion might be too generalized. Please understand the enormity of the topics we're covering and forgive us if we overshoot or undershoot the mark. If you refer back to episode 26, where we presented our concept of the four anatomies of osteopathic perception, we presented the personal, the cultural, the biological, and the cosmic, or the non-material. In that view, this episode is focusing on the biological. This is where we're describing what it is that the body's asking for in terms of support in the material realm. So please remember, as you listen to this episode, we're not saying this is the only thing that's happening. This is one of the many aspects of what's going on in the body. We always welcome questions or comments, and please keep in mind that we're attempting to address a wide audience with this challenging topic. Steve, why don't you get us started? You're the physiologist in the family, so give us your expertise on this topic.
Ivan, that was a great introduction. In summary of what we've covered in the past and what we plan to achieve today, let's start with a bit of osteopathic history before we dive into physiology.
Of course you're starting with history. In addition to being an osteopath and a physiologist, you're also an osteopathic and medical historian.
Thank you, Bon, but I think you might be giving me too much credit here. I love history in general as a branch of learning and osteopathic history in particular as a personal passion, but have I crossed the line to be called a true historian? I'm not sure. I'll have to ponder that label and get back to you and our listeners.
Well, how about you're an amateur historian enthusiast?
Okay, I'll accept that label. Now let's get back to our osteopathic beginnings to provide a context for this episode's topic. When Andrews Taylor Still organized the clinical system he called osteopathy and what Americans call osteopathic medicine, he created a healthcare profession based upon his empirical clinical observation as a frontier physician in the years preceding and following the Civil War. He studied patients and their illnesses over 35 years of inquiry and clinical trial and error that began in 1864. Yes, I said 1864, not 1874. It's understood that Andrew Taylor Still started exploring alternatives to allopathic medicine after his three children died of spinal meningitis in 1864, all within a three-week nightmarish window. Based upon my reading of Still's personal history, I deduced that once his children died, he was not only brokenhearted, but became motivated to find a better way to treat disease. In fact, he stated in his autobiography that after the death of his children, I was torn and lacerated with grief.
Oh, God, his description is so visceral. You know, we in the 21st century find it unimaginable that someone might have three out of their four children die from illnesses so close together. Still is such a great example of a broken heart that didn't crumble, but opened to something new.
Yeah.
I've recently been writing a blog post about grief, so I'm immersed in the language of grieving. If you're interested in checking out my personal blog, go to my website, bonniegintis.com, or to my Substack, bonniegintis.substack.com. The entry on grief should be up in about a week.
So it was only after this personal trauma from Dr. Still that he was able to realize that he needed an improved option for medical care for his patients, as well as for his family, rather than blindly relying upon the toxic medical practices of the mid to late 19th century. He began that journey in 1864, and its first culmination was with an aha event in 1874 with his Damascene moment, seeing the emergence of the profession he later called osteopathy on that auspicious day on June 21st, 1874, when he was struck metaphorically by the ram of reason. It's important for us to realize that he began his empiric experimentations and explorations after the death of his children. He had been practicing as an allopathic physician, using bloodletting, purgatives, blistering, mercury compounds, and arsenic, to name just a few, for the treatment of all diseases. His medical foundation was based upon balancing the four humors. He was considered a regular physician while living in Kansas. He was a part of the status quo in medical practice. Andrew Taylor still had little formal education. His early education was what we now call homeschooling. He was not university trained. He was not schooled in scientific rigor. But hardly anybody was in the mid to late 1800s. He was a deep thinker and an autodidact. He was also a bit of a polymath. He was a keen observer and a creative clinician devoted to doing whatever it took to help relieve suffering in his patients. Most of all, it's important to note that he was not a researcher. After his clinical awakening in 1874, he then self-studied this possibility of a new way of practicing medicine as a frontier itinerant physician traveling through Kansas and later Missouri, fine-tuning the profession we now call osteopathic medicine in America. Andrew Taylor still was an impressive autodidact. All of his empiric research came together in 1892 when he opened the first school of osteopathy, the American School of Osteopathy, in Kirksville, Missouri. Later in the osteopathic profession, throughout the early and mid-20th century, important scientists such as Louisa Burns, D.O., J. Stedman Denslow, D.O., and Irvin Kaur, Ph.D., explored a scientific explanation of what we colloquially call the work of our hands. They attempted to scientifically explain what we felt, perceived, and treated as osteopaths. It was Denslow and Kaur who systematized the neurohormonal physiology associated with what had been termed the osteopathic lesion. Modern American osteopathic medicine prefers not to use the term osteopathic lesion, but many of us continue to use this antiquated but not obsolete term in private discussions with colleagues. I still believe that this term is acceptable to utilize. I would like to discuss this interesting topic of the osteopathic lesion in a future podcast rather than diverting too far off topic now. Ultimately, the osteopathic lesion became what is now known as the somatic dysfunction. I'd like to provide everyone with a qualifier. This episode is going to be technical. I'll present a foundation of basic science using anatomy and physiology that will then set the stage for a discussion of osteopathic pathophysiology. I would suggest that listening to this episode more than once may improve your understanding of the complicated yet pragmatic osteopathic theory of spinal somatic dysfunctions and the facilitated segment. This is a situation whereby the study of neuroscience is clinically pragmatic and is not just theoretical mumbo-jumbo. Before I get into the osteopathic perspective regarding facilitation, I'd like to briefly review the autonomic nervous system. The body as a whole system divides its neurohormonal responses to positive or negative inputs into two broad categories or consequences. The first outcome is the intricate response to stress involved with an activation of the sympathetic nervous system. This is the aspect of the autonomics that deals with a fight-or-flight reaction, real or perceived. At their best, sympathetic nervous system's reactions, as well as adrenal activation via the hypothalamic adrenal axis, are life-saving. At their worst, they are turned on at the wrong moment, for the wrong reason, and for the wrong length of time. Thus, sympathetic nervous system overactivation creates physiologic chaos and anatomic confusion in non-fight-or-flight situations.
I have two terms I use colloquially to describe this situation. In sympathetic nervous system overactivation in non-fight-or-flight situations, I call this a survival mechanism gone awry or autonomic disarray.
I love your terms autonomic disarray and survival mechanisms gone awry.
The episode you've been listening to just faded out because you are not yet a subscriber to Osteopathy Unplugged. Please visit patreon.com/osteopathyunplugged and become a subscriber in order to have full access to the rest of this episode as well as the complete collection.
We have created a set of foundational episodes that will be available for free for everyone. These teachings provide an introduction to osteopathic clinical philosophy. However, the full versions of all episodes are only available through Patreon. access Patreon through their app or through a browser page. Thank you for listening to Osteopathy Unplugged.
And thank you for your interest in the osteopathic experience.
Until next time, be well, listen deeply, and stay curious.